当然那个是对出征国的龙舟啊，我入学时的，还是穿人的兄弟们住的，对我的龙舟都穿人那边娘的肉块讲，去一路就牛腩就端上，对我的还是，对我就吧，其他就，嗯，那个那闽南个大伯的姓马的呢，干哪，去人那边娘的肉块讲，去一路就牛腩就端不能行，没的哪里，都是。Lüji Jalam, Energy Samuel Chesso, the Negaton, and Midi, Top the Shiru, and the Kadim, the Shingle,
Shulaki Hassa, the Nyane,
Hassa, Sonnen, Sonnen, Nyane, Rokab Jans, the Kavada Jay, Bagada, sorry, local Danny Dinan, then Yat Chubu to Tom.
There is, however, recognition that when it comes to you know, inferring internal qualities of people, you know, there will be a limit. But still, to a point, one can infer inner qualities on the basis of how that individual behaves, speaks, and interacts with others. And that is on a sustained level, not just once or twice, but on a sustained level. On a sustained level, so that the individual can withstand that kind of observation. So when you observe someone on a sustained level, then one can infer some inner qualities of the being, the way in which he or she behaves himself, interacts with others, speaks, and so on. And a wonderful metaphor is given in this particular text. This is a Vinaya text, a monastic discipline text, where it says that although the fish... No, this is really talking about... This is we're not... So this is in the context of a student's advice to the students to check out who would be a qualified teacher. If you're looking for someone to be your teacher, you know, what kind of methods should you use or criteria should you use to find out? And the example given is that even though the fish may remain hidden under the surface of the ocean, but you know, occasionally with the waves and tides, we can get a sense of what kind of fish, whether large or small, might be in that ocean. So similarly, by checking how one the teacher behaves and speaks and interacts and so on. So in the context of the monastic discipline practice, the teacher's qualities are listed as someone who is ethically sound, and then who knows the various rituals of the monastic discipline, is compassionate, especially towards the ill, and also the people around that teacher are well-behaved, trustworthy, someone who is tolerant, and then and also... That is, someone who is enthusiastic in giving teachings. And someone who would work hard to fulfill the needs, both the material and the spiritual needs of the student. And someone who is sensitive in reading, someone who is sort of sensitive to the capacity of the student, so that is skillful in teaching. Because otherwise, sometimes you could have a very annoying teacher who may be very enthusiastic, really pushes down everything.
There's also a second person. Factor that is a tradition that you report your
this is what I was
meditation
asking.
Progress or obstacles to the teacher, and who will validate or give advice or discriminate between something that is a genuine experience or just you are making it up and fooling yourself.
In fact, this process begins very early on in the monastic context, where you're supposed to seek the counsel of the master in many other activities, what you do.
So, Can I just, I just want to press on this a little bit, because what I was trying to get at it was, if say someone reports that they are able in a shamatha type meditation to stabilize their attention, say for an hour in an unwavering way, are there specific checks that a teacher would apply to determine whether that was deluded or whether it was veridical? Are there specific sort of second-person phenomenological criteria that can be brought to bear to check the quality of the meditation?
Maybe these were not really a major concern, because early on the emphasis on ethically sound discipline has been so emphasized. So probably those were not major concerns. It's true, one can be, you know, one may not be lying, but one could get deluded. So His Holiness was saying that, in fact, someone he knew once told him that the person was about 40 years earlier, 40 years ago, he at one point he was having repeated dreams of having visions of various Buddhas and so on in his dreams. So he once mentioned to His Holiness, probably he may have reached the first Bodhisattva level, which is a very high level of realization. And having visions of, you know, multiple visions of the Buddha is listed as one of the qualities of that state. But His Holiness gently reminded him that there are also many other qualities listed
along with it. After that, he never brought that up.
Yes, I think the teacher will cross-check from other aspects. Mm-hmm. And there's a famous story of someone who became a very, very great meditator. It's called Pamodrupa. And his teacher was Gampopa, also a great master. And that Pamodrupa has really the impression that he also achieved the first bhumi of the Bodhisattva. And he described all his meditation experience and level of realization and how he could maintain his mind in a certain way, very lucid, very clear, very blissful. But, you know, the way he was describing was already revealing that that was sort of an impression, but all the quality was not present. Mm-hmm. So to sort of break to the conceit and pride of the disciple, the master was eating this tsampa, you know, this kind of roast barley flour, and he was listening, and then at the end he said, you know, your realization is not worth this piece of tsampa. And at that moment, sort of the conceit and pride of that disciple sort of collapsed, and then he had sort of a genuine understanding. That's what he says in his life story.
Well, this is probably a very naive question, but is it thought that meditation on compassion, for example, actually makes a difference in the world, makes the world a better place? Or is it the case that meditation on compassion leads to more acts of compassion in the world? Or is meditation really primarily for the individual?